Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 28th, 1997.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, across all these many prolific time zones, from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains, even Guam, and here's out Guam, all the way east to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and tonight, boy, what a treat you're in for. Wayne Green is here. And I know some of you out there are going, huh? Who's Wayne Green? Well, it's easier to answer who isn't Wayne Green and what hasn't he done. He sent me a list of things that Wayne Green has done. I'll give you a few in a moment. I'm not going to begin to read all of these. So that's what's coming up tonight, and you name it, we'll talk about it. As I said, it really might be easier to list what Wayne Green has not done. Piloted a nuclear attack submarine 800 feet under the Pacific. Now that I would like to try. Piloted an Air Force C-5B. Oh man, that's a big aircraft. Climbed the Great Wall of China. Has operated a ham station from the famed American Embassy in Tehran. Operated from the Korean DMZ as a ham. From King Hussein's palace in Amman, Jordan. That must have been fun. Been to 132 countries. Helped new technologies like cellular phones, personal computers, and compact discs to grow into major industries. Represented the U.S. at an international communications conference. Represented New Hampshire for Governor Sununu at a governor's conference in Halifax. Served on the New Hampshire Economic Development Commission. Has had 100 long editorials published thus far, began the first personal computer magazine, Byte, started the first computer magazine devoted to a single computer, 80 Micro, started one of the first personal computer software companies, opened computer stores nationwide, eventually sold a chain of 58 stores, and I'm about a third of the way through the list. He's that kind of guy. He's done it all, or has he? Wayne Green from New Hampshire. Wayne.
Well, good morning, Art.
Good morning.
That's 1,000 editorials.
1,000 editorials.
Yeah.
1,000 editorials. Having just done even the third of the things that I read on this list, you should be at least as rich as Bill Gates.
Well, I have never had any interest in money. It's always kind of come by accident and surprised me. And I've never done any of these things with the purpose of making money. I've done things because I look around, somebody ought to do that. And I give up and I say, okay, I'll do it.
You know what I think your problem is, Wayne? You do it before anybody else does it. You get done with it, go on to something else. Then somebody else comes along and says, ooh, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And they get into the business, they begin to market whatever it was, and they get rich.
Fine, I'm happy with that.
Have you looked at it that way?
Yeah, I've never wanted to be rich. I've been rich several times, and it doesn't please me.
I'm never going to forget what Ted Turner said. And he's got, of course, baseball teams and networks and all the money a body could ever use and Jane Fonda. And he said, you know, being rich is kind of like an empty bag.
Well, it's kind of a responsibility, too, because then you're supposed to take care of it, and that's a full-time job. And I've just never had any interest in that. But Inc. magazine did a survey of the most successful entrepreneurs, and they found that none of them did their things for the reason of making money. They also found that virtually none of them ever completed college.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Is that so? Very interesting. I, too, have I do what I do because I love it, and, you know, my attitude was the money is probably never going to come. Broadcasting is not one of those industries, unless you get lucky and make it to the top, where you make any money. Generally, you starve to death, and I did that for a lot of years, but I had fun.
Yep. Yeah, no, I enjoyed that, and I came close to getting into a thing similar to what you're doing.
Really?
But, Lordy, that was 50 years ago, and I was an engineer announcer down at WSPB in Sarasota, Florida, and they, I was doing such a nice job of ad-libbing and talking about things that they offered me a whole morning show.
That's how it begins.
And... But instead, I chose to go in a different direction. I said, no, I don't want to get into that. I think there's things that are going to be more fun for me. And, of course, I eventually ended up publishing a ham radio magazine. Now, what can be more fun than that? Good heavens. I don't feel like I've worked for years.
The expeditions could be more fun. I mean, packing up and going out into the middle of Christmas Island or someplace like that.
Right. Well, I've done that. I started back in 1958 with my first trip to Navassa, which is a tiny American-owned island down in the Caribbean between Haiti and Jamaica. And it's a fascinating island. It's about 1 by 3 miles. It has no beaches. It has cliffs all the way around, 100-foot cliffs.
Wow.
And you have to climb up a steel rope ladder to get on the island. And, of course, six of us hams chartered a boat out of Nassau and sailed down there. And in the, along the way, we ran into a storm, a very heavy storm, and we almost got killed a couple of times, which, talk about adventure, but eventually we got to the island.
And then operated as
and,
a ham.
And we operated our ham rigs there. And, of course, we dropped some of the stuff into the water as we were loading it onto the island. And I brought along my scuba gear, so I had to go down and salvage all of the parts from about 100 feet down. And so, anyway, that was adventure.
Adventure. Wayne, on behalf of hams out there, I want to ask you a question. I'm a ham operator, have been since I was... real small, and I'm quite devoted. Actually, I've got a new rig, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, do I love it, too. It's a Yaesu 1000 MP.
Oh,
really like
yeah.
that rig.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what?
They make nice stuff.
You know what, though? The bands are dead, pretty much.
Well, of course, and they're going to be that way for a couple more years, although the sunspots, as you know, are starting... on the new cycle, and the cycle comes up fast.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. In behalf of hams, have we now detected for sure the change in polarization indicating that we're going to be on the upswing?
Yeah, it's definitely on the upswing. And as I say, it comes up fast. So I think we'll be seeing our major long-distance bands opening up in the evening again. Gosh, when the sunspots are high, you can work 20 meters all night and talk anywhere in the world.
Sure.
And it's so much fun. I remember talking to a fellow in Perth, Australia, which is very close to the Antipodes from this from my location. And we were turning our beams in, synchronously and talking to each other as we were turning our beams east, west, and so forth, north and south. And no matter which way we turned, as long as we both turn them the same, we can hear each other.
In other words, any course plotted across the world, or around the world, actually,
right.
Was working. It was that good.
Right. One more thing.
Yes.
When I was down in Australia, I was visiting a fellow that was doing moon bounce up in Birchip.
Yeah, moon bounce is really cool. In other words, you transmit... Well, people need to know, Wayne.
Okay.
They don't know what it is. You transmit a signal toward the moon... with a lot of power and an array, and then you know you hit the moon because, what is it, 2.5 seconds, something like that?
Right, yeah.
2.5 seconds later, your signal comes back.
Right, it bounces back.
Mm-hmm.
And this fellow was doing it on 2 meters, which is quite a feat. Most of them are doing it up on much higher frequencies. And he had a great big antenna array there aimed at that. But at any rate, when I visited him, I got on the air on 20 meters, which is the major long-distance band in the world, and talked to my home station, and that was fun. And we said, well, let's try it on 75 meters. Well, now, working Australia on 75 meters is not easy.
That's quite a feat, yes.
And we went down there, and I was coming through S9 on 75.
Wow. I've talked to quite
a number. Thrill.
Well, I'm lucky out here where I'm in the desert. I can put up a big antenna and lots and lots of wires, so I do a lot of work there on 75.
Sure.
I want to be careful not to get over people's heads, but ham radio really is a lot of fun.
Well, they can get the idea of how excited we are about it.
What is the...
You know, I'm into this almost 60 years now,
yep.
And I'm still excited.
What's the best path in for a young person now?
Well, of course, the no-code tech path is a good start because it's so easy. You memorize a few questions and answers, and you've got a license, and you can get started. But from there on, it's a question of using the hobby as a way to learn all of the interesting things there are to learn.
Let me be a board director from the ARRL for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's heresy. GW is important, always has been important, and it
yes,
will
it's
continue.
Been important for 100 years.
It will continue to keep the riffraff out of ham radio. We must have CW. This no code business must go.
Right, and I'm all for having the riffraff in there.
In other words, you want company.
I feel that the security of our bands and amateurs are allocated billions and billions of dollars of frequencies, and the security lies in our using them, not having a few fellows down there sending messages by Morse code at, you know, 10 or 15 words a minute,
mm-hmm.
That we should be communicating at 5,000 words a minute with computers and modems that connect in by radio.
Yeah, by the way, why don't we have a geostationary satellite for hams yet?
Well, golly, we've got 24 satellites up there. What do you want?
I want a geostationary satellite.
Oh, okay. They've got them pretty close to that. They've got them that are circling around in a fixed path.
Right. I know. But I want a real one. I mean, you and I both know. Wayne, do you have any idea? You take the average television satellite.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to devote the 24 C-band transponder bandwidth
mm-hmm.
to hams and park it in a geostationary position, we could literally just say goodbye shortwave. Who needs it? There would be so much bandwidth available for personal and instant communication. And hams, well, I guess the reason they won't do it is because the phone companies won't let them.
I don't know. No, it is not that. I talked with the owners of these satellites, the commercial satellites, and I said, look, you've got a bunch of channels that are sitting there not doing anything that you're keeping for emergency.
Exactly.
How
about donating one?
Exactly. And they said, sure, we'd be glad to. And I wrote an editorial on that, a couple of them, saying, yes, they've said, yes, they'd love to. I was on the long-range planning commission of the FCC.
Yes.
And I got to see and know all of these people personally that represented these satellites. And they said, yeah, no problem. And I tried to get the ARL to do something about it, and this is an anathema to them. This is really against their religion because it means, it's going to hurt Morse code.
Eventually the old guys will die out and something new will start to happen, right?
I don't know.
My attitude about the ARRL, frankly, mimics yours. That, folks, is the Amateur Radio Relay League, which represents, ostensibly, they claim, all hams or hams, the biggest organization. They are really that. They're the biggest.
Yeah, they have 12% of the hams as members.
Yeah, but they've done a lot of things that have incurred my ire over the years, and I can't figure out why, but there's a big ham fest coming up, and the ARRL invited me to be a keynote speaker. I thought, oh, man, they must not have listened to my show. Like,
of course they haven't.
Like you getting an invitation to address the board up there in Newington.
Right.
Anyway, listen, I've got a lot of questions I want to ask you about. One involves time travel.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really interesting guy on about a week ago named mm-hmm. Terrence McKenna.
Right.
And that eternally great question came up. If time travel is possible, where are all the time travelers?
Right. I think I have a reasonable answer to that.
Well, let me tell you what he said.
Okay.
He said that they will be here, and it will occur when time travel is invented. From that moment on, you will see many, many time travelers, but it will not be possible to travel back past the point where it was invented.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, what a good answer. What's yours?
My answer is that I think if you take a look at the sweep of development of technology, as you say, it is going up asymptotically. It's ever-increasing in its rapid growth. And we take a look at what we've developed in the last 50, 100, 500,000 years, and you see how fast things are going, that eventually we're going to figure out how to travel in time, that it just has to happen. And I don't believe that we're going to be limited. And there's some pretty good indications that we're not going to be limited on where we can go in time.
Okay, then where are they?
Okay, now let me explain. One of the paradoxes of time travel is killing your grandfather, right?
Correct, yes.
Well, now, if you expand that concept, anything that the time travelers do that changes civilization enough so that they're not going to be there in the future, they're not going to do that.
Well,
therefore, we have this... We have an explanation for these, quote, men in black that come in and take artifacts, take pictures and things like that away from people who have pictures and experiences with UFOs.
Really? So you think time travelers might be the men in black?
I think they may be cleaning up after themselves in order to get back where they came from.
Huh. Well, of course, I suppose even with time travel... and time travelers, mistakes could be made. And then you would have to imagine that they could go back and correct those or clean up those
right.
mistakes.
Sure. And that explains that phenomenon. It also explains why we're seeing or can see pictures of UFOs in the cave paintings of 17, 20,000 years ago over in France. Why... Alexander the Great described them in pretty good detail in his diaries, and why we have all of these times down through history when the saucers have appeared.
Wayne, I saw another one.
Right.
Did you hear my description the other night?
Well, I did hear about the one that you saw.
No.
Oh, you saw,
I saw one recently. About 2 days ago.
Okay.
And it was really weird. A military jet was traveling from the east, southeast toward the west-northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was laying down a big twin contrail.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting because I thought it might be some kind of launch. It was gaining altitude at such a clip. And I couldn't make out what was, you know, at the end of the contrail. So I went in and got my binoculars. And I looked at this thing. And I could make out the fact that it was a military jet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cool. So... my wife said, but wait a minute, what's that? And looking back down the contrail, here's this silvery glowing disc following, not in, but next to the contrail.
Mm-hmm.
And it followed it for a while, and we stood there dumbfounded. Then it stopped dead, where it remained for about 2 minutes, just sitting there, glowing. And then it took off to the south, but mostly up in altitude, until it became a dot and then finally disappeared from human vision.
Sure.
I saw that. My wife saw it.
Right.
It was incredible. I mean, I'm still in shock about that. So, Wayne, there's something out there.
Well, I believe that we're not going to see any civilization that makes the same model of a time travel machine for thousands of years.
All right, hold tight a sec. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997.
Guess who's here? Wayne Green. You're in for a real treat. Stay put. I'm telling you. Back now to Wayne Green. Wayne?
Yeah.
There are days, and I just thought about this when I was talking about web TV. There are days when I love my computers. I love them. I mean, it's actually a relationship.
They're addictive, aren't they?
Well, no, it's more. It's like it's like love. It's a relationship between a machine and man, and I love it. And then there are other days when things go wrong.
Oh, they can be extreme. Well, almost as frustrating as a wife.
When I hate my computer. I mean, it really is exactly that kind of a relationship. I couldn't do without it. Sometimes, though, I wonder what I'm doing with it. And that brings up even the whole subject of technology, the march of technology and so forth. We're cloning, Wayne. We're getting ready to clone. We're doing a lot of things that seem beyond our ability to manage ethically. What do you think?
Well, of course, technology is way ahead of ethics and our emotional development. And one of the things that I am very interested in is what we call consciousness.
Oh, yes.
And I think this ties in with that.
Me too. What is consciousness?
Well, of course, it's awareness of awareness is one definition of it. But it goes far beyond that because we have the subconscious. And I was just talking with a chap today who's got a course in how to speed read. And I guess that's not really the word because he's got people that using his technique, which are doing 2 million words a minute.
What?
Yep.
I don't know if I believe that.
Well, I'm going to try it myself and we'll see. He claims that anybody can learn to do this, and you can just flip pages one after the other as fast as you can go, and everything is in there, and you get a very high degree of recollection of what you've had and so forth. So we'll see how it works out. There's okay. Enough people that are doing this so that, well, of course, I don't approach anything as a skeptic, nor as a believer. I'm a pragmatist.
No, that's
okay,
fine.
Show
that's,
me.
That's good.
Show me.
well,
I'm not going to say no.
You know, millions of words a minute, that means you could take a book the size of mine, and you could go...
Exactly.
And be done. Now, before I would be willing to be involved in that, I would go to the person making this claim, take a book I knew damn well they hadn't read, you've got a whole list of them,
mm-hmm.
and I'd say, here, prove
right.
it. And then I would test them. And then if I got all the right answers, well, yeah, then I too might say, all right, let's get into this.
Sure.
Let's try it.
Well, you know, that's one of the problems that psychics have had.
I know.
And, you know, some of them can do awfully well, but they spend their whole life proving to one person after another that they can do it. And it gets rather frustrating after a while. And, of course, again, we have the subconscious. We have things like reincarnation, past lives,
yes.
Out of body,
yes.
Near-death experiences,
yes.
psychics, auras, Ouija boards, and psi, and so forth. All of these things tie into consciousness, and these are fields that you're not supposed to investigate these days, and you're ridiculed if you do. But they need to be investigated.
Well, don't worry about ridicule. Look,
no.
I don't worry about it. Look, how close, you're very much in touch with the computer world.
Mm-hmm.
I had a fellow on named Charles Osman who was talking about nanotechnology.
Right.
And we got into the subject of the web,
mm-hmm.
and he contended that he believes in the next few years we will begin to see sentient entities on the web.
Mm. My pragmatism is strained.
I understand. however...
Because, you know, as I say, we don't understand consciousness. but it does seem to be something that exists with living things. And
well, you remember when Kasparov got big blue here recently?
Oh, sure.
His comment was that for the first time in playing any computer he has ever played, he began to detect signs of real intelligence. That's quite a statement.
Yeah.
So I know how closely you monitor computer development. Is it possible? When might it be possible?
I think it's going to be more and more possible as we develop the circuits to simulate intelligence.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think HAL 2000 is on the horizon yet.
Oh, well, aren't they beginning to play with the integration of biological elements to hardware?
Yes, and if you recall, that was one of the things that Damian Brinkley warned.
I do, as a matter of fact, recall that. All right, let me bring back something else from the closet here. Art Wayne Green spoke about a cold fusion home heating unit about a year ago. He said then this unit would be on the market around the summer of 97. Where is it?
Well, I am always hoping these things will happen. And look, microcomputers, or personal computers as we call them, took a few years longer than I expected. And this is taking longer. Patterson down there in Sarasota, Florida, is generating over 4,000 times more heat out than in. Oh, big news in the cold fusion field is that the NASA Research Laboratory in Cleveland, Ohio, has confirmed the cold fusion excess heat effect. And they investigated very thoroughly and have a long paper out saying that, yes, this is true, it works, and that we are absolutely foolish if we don't investigate this further as a major source of energy for the world.
Well,
and that's NASA laboratory.
I know that, what was it, Pons and Flashman had to take off to England to do their research, where they, I think, still are, somewhere over there anyway.
Oh, they had to go down. Well, actually, Toyota came to them and said, look, we'll build you the laboratory of your dreams anywhere you want. Where do you want it? And it's down on the Riviera.
well, good taste anyway. I hope they're enjoying themselves. We, however, for some reason, and I still haven't quite put all this together, Wayne. Here was the discovery. Then some other institutions tried with varied success to duplicate it and couldn't. And the whole thing got put down and absolutely destroyed from a PR point of view in this country.
Well, some institutions did confirm it, and the media would not report on that. Other institutions, many of which had good reasons for not discovering it, were unable to discover it. And one major institution did confirm it and then changed the data to show that it didn't work.
Oh, that's a very serious allegation.
Because they were getting millions of dollars for hot fusion research. And you know, just like our medical industry.
God, everything's money.
Right. With the medical industry, another wonderful book I just got recently called Innocent Casualties, The FDA's War Against Humanity. And marvelous book. I'm not only about three-quarters done with that. But at any rate, the FDA supporting the AMA and the NIH and all of the other letters make sure that any inexpensive cure for an expensive illness is buried. And this is a group of people that came up with a nutritional product, not a drug, a nutritional product that was curing AIDS.
Curing AIDS.
And doing it very thoroughly, and they did a very exhaustive test of it to prove it. They turned all of that data over to the FDA, and the FDA just ignored everything and went through extreme measures to close them down.
God, you know, I hear these stories.
Well, this is very thoroughly documented in this book.
How did they document the fact that it was curing AIDS?
Oh, they had a test of 100 people, and which was done with a research laboratory.
How can the FDA bury something that well documented?
Well, first of all, they held a press conference to talk about the results, invited all of the media. They got two articles in the newspapers out of it, one of which said quoted FDA people saying that this is no good, and so forth. The media totally ignored it. And the media and these people had written letters and did everything they could with their senators, their representatives, material to the head of the FDA, to the head of National Institute of Health, the president, and so forth. And they have copies of all these letters in the book there that they just went through extraordinary means to try to get the word out.
All right.
And then the FDA came in and said, well, there's one element in, you know, one thing in your mix here that we're not sure about, and although it is permitted in every other country, we've decided that you can't use that. And they then raided their plant and took all of that, all of their product.
It implies such a gigantic, dark conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you said you're pragmatic. A pragmatic person, at times at least, ought to have doubts about conspiracies of these sorts. The carburetor that gets a million miles per gallon,
mm-hmm.
the machine that cures AIDS, the nutritional supplement that cures AIDS, the free energy that we could have except the oil companies keep it down. All of these things, a rational person, and I, pragmatic,
mm-hmm.
has got to doubt these constant sources of conspiracy theory. I do, frankly, Wayne. For example, free energy, all right?
Mm-hmm.
You talked about Patterson.
Right.
I would accept even a toy, Wayne. A
mm-hmm.
toy.
Right.
You know, like the Energizer Bunny or something or another that keeps going after you ought to keep going. Something that simply demonstrates over unity gain, even at the toy level. Now,
right.
it's like saying, if there is time travel, where the hell are the time travelers? If there is free energy, where the hell are the machines?
Well, getting back to the secrecy and to the cover-ups,
yeah.
Having been involved in one of those personally, I know that the government is good at keeping secrets. The Amelia Earhart case. And they're still covering that up after 60 years.
Well, as you know, another young lady just completed what Amelia had attempted.
Well, she didn't, because she didn't go over a truck and take pictures.
Well, all right. But, I mean, she did circumnavigate the globe.
Oh, sure. Well, that never was a problem. The big, you know, that wasn't the reason for the trip. The whole reason for the trip was to take pictures for FDR, for the Navy, of Truck Island, of the Japanese installations there, which they didn't know what was going on.
You're saying, in other words, she was spying.
She was a spy.
Is this one of those things that will be locked in a vault like the Kennedy information, only to be dispensed to us after 50 years have gone by?
Well, 60 have gone by, and they still haven't released it.
That's a good point.
So I'm not sure if they're ever going to release that. But I, you know, just serendipitously, the mechanic who prepared her plane for that, installed the cameras and the higher power engines and the extra wing tanks, was a good friend of my father's. And he came over to dinner before the flight and told us what was going on. And so I knew about it before she left.
Wow. And he said what? That they installed stealth cameras of some sort?
Right. To take pictures of Truck Island.
Truck Island.
And the idea was to fly from Lae, New Guinea, up to Howland Island, and with the higher power engines and the extra wing tanks, be
mm-hmm.
able to go to Truck take the pictures and get the Howland the same time as she normally would have with the regular engines.
And you contend what, that she was shot down?
No, I don't, because when I was in Majuro Island in the Marshalls 7 years later, we had a submarine rest camp there, and I was on a submarine during the war. And we came in there after a patrol run, and our crew talked to some of the natives there, and they explained about a woman who had crashed in the Marshalls 7 years earlier with a manned navigator, and that the Japanese had come and taken her and the navigator and the plane to Saipan.
Well,
this was in 1944.
All right. Let's say that we are keeping this secret.
Mm-hmm.
That the implication clearly has to be that the Japanese are also holding this secret.
Exactly. Well, what an embarrassment to have killed the most famous woman in the world.
Well, that's true. That's true. So she was what then? Executed
as a
spy by the Japanese?
Yep. On Saipan.
How much real good hard proof of that is there?
Well, pretty good. They have interviewed, a fellow named Fred Gorner really spent years researching this, with the Navy fighting him every inch of the way. And, for instance, he called an admiral that was involved with this, and the admiral said, sure, I'll be glad to tell you the story. It's late enough now, so it's not a problem. And so he went up to visit the fellow in Seattle. And when he got there, the admiral said, "Gee, I don't know what you're talking about. I never said anything like that. I don't know anything about what this is all about."
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. And I vacillate back and forth. I think a pragmatic person has to take all of this with a grain of salt, unless you can prove it.
Sure.
And so I ask again, Wayne,
mm-hmm.
where the hell are the little over-unity toys? Something that would tell the world, here it is, it really works, check
mm-hmm.
this out. Where are they?
Well, give us another year. I've talked with them about putting out a, a kit for kids.
That'd
do
be
their
good.
Their own cold fusion.
Sure.
And they say, well, we've talked about that, but the... problems are that if you let this run dry, it can explode.
Right.
And therefore, we can't get the insurance and so forth to protect us against stupidity. And I think the only people that have insurance against stupidity is the cigarette makers.
Yeah. After the break coming up, I would like you to describe, if you would, how you can do... Can you do that without legal liability? How a experiment with cold fusion to prove it to yourself can be done?
Well, it's a little difficult because you need a calorimeter. And you need a way to measure the temperature carefully inside your liquid and outside. And if you can do that, and I think any kid should be able to do that, it isn't difficult to do if you get a hold of some nickel, and preferably powdered nickel.
All right, well, hold that description,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get into it when we get back. Wayne Green is my guest, publisher of 73 Magazine, and generally considered to be a boil on the butt of the ARRL. Inside Stuff. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997. presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired May 28, 1997.
One thing I figured out is we're not going to go back where we came from. And we're about to go on to whatever is next. The subject of my book, and the only time you're going to hear about it tonight, I think, it's called The Quickening. The first edition, the first printing, God, never get it right, first printing of my book sold out in 2 weeks, and then I didn't have it for a month. We finally got it again for immediate shipment. You can get an autographed copy of The Quickening, and they tell me it's going very quickly now, hence not much advertising. If you want a first edition signed copy of The Quickening, pay close attention, because I may not mention it again tonight, and they're going fast again. It's great in one way, and it's a drag in another. And by the way, in the category, the continuing category of things quickening, the tornadoes just experienced near Austin are probably the worst I've ever seen. I'm sure a lot of you have seen the photographs by now. Many dead, many missing. Most of the missing, unless there's a miracle, are presumed dead. Our weather is worsening. The National Weather Service now says to expect a horrendous hurricane season. That's on the way. The bad news, really, or the quickening news, if you will, just keeps coming. There is a new staph infection and I'll read a little bit about this as we go on this morning with Wayne. There is a new staph infection for which there is apparently no cure. For the first time in all of history, they are now saying that they have one now that may be unstoppable. It's a brand new strain that was discovered in a Japanese infant, showing resistance for the first time against the very best antibiotic we've got, the one they use as an antibiotic of last resort. This may be very bad news, folks. And it eats it alive. So there are samples on the way to the CDC in Atlanta right now. And they're going to take a look. But it may be that in the race of antibiotics versus little things that will get us, the little things, which I try never to let bother me, may be winning at the moment or about to. And that kind of winds into the other big story breaking this morning, and that is scientists apparently have now discovered, a scientist, let's give him credit, that thousands of comet snowballs from outer space are pelting the Earth's atmosphere every single day, adding to the planet's water and delivering organic chemicals that may have been the original basis for life here. The finding is a return from the scientific wilderness for Louis A. Frank. Louis A. Frank, who was banished virtually. A physicist at the University of Iowa who first proposed 11 years ago that space snowballs continuously strike the Earth. His theory was denounced and dismissed at the time, but on Wednesday his new study's muffled criticism in a hall full of scientists at the American Geophysical Union Convention. In other words, faced with apparently irrefutable evidence, there must have been a lot of going on out there. Now, what you might bear in mind is that in addition to delivering water unto us, these constantly bombarding cosmic snowballs, some the size, they say, of houses, are also delivering new organic materials all the time. So it might, if you believe this theory with regard to the beginning of life or the seeding of life on Earth, then you have to imagine what brought us here could take us away. At any rate, these are subjects covered in my book, The Quickening. And if you would like if you would like to peruse it, read it, have an autographed version, you should not wait. You should act now, because I am afraid the second printing is not going to be around very much longer. My guest is Wayne Greene. He is editor of 73 magazine. He's been around for as long as dirt. He's done everything in the world. He is a fascinating guy. And we're going to talk to him now about something that I want to warn you about. We are going to tell you how to perform a cold fusion experiment at home. But listen, there are dangers. It should not be done without adult informed supervision, I suppose, and you really should be part of it. So having issued that warning, because there are dangers, which we will describe, Wayne says you can prove to yourself that cold fusion works, and he's about to describe a simple, relatively simple experiment to prove to yourself that it works. Wayne, let's do it. How do you at home, even though we're not supposed to tell people to try this kind of thing at home, how do you go about proving this?
Well, just taking the experiment that they did at the NASA Lewis Research Center group in Cleveland, they used nickel, and they used potassium carbonate in light water. That's regular water, distilled water.
Well, what do you mean nickel? Like a nickel?
There's not much nickel in nickel.
There's no oil, so where do you get nickel?
Golly, I'm not sure, but what you want to do is get some nickel powder if you can.
Nickel powder.
Although there have been people that have just hung two nickels into a glass of water with some potassium carbonate in it and been able to measure excess heat.
Now, wait a minute. Two nickels.
You have to pass an electric current through it.
How much of one?
Well, not much. They're running around a tenth of a watt of power through there.
At what voltage?
Probably around 20 volts.
Around 20 volts.
Mm-hmm.
And you're running it from one nickel to the other through in a glass,
right,
with potassium carbonate inside, huh?
Right. And you want to make sure not to have your copper wire that is connected to the nickels in the water, because otherwise the copper starts coming out into the solution. And I've got pictures here of people that have tried that, and they get a nice blue solution.
Oh. How do you get the nickel into the water? Oh, I see. Then you would have to attach the copper wire at the edge of the nickel.
Right, yeah.
And just
Or a little alligator clip will do it.
Okay. Oh, that'd be a good idea.
Sure.
All right, so you alligator clip on
and then you hang the nickel down in the water with some potassium carbonate.
Two nickels, one at each side, right?
Right. And put the voltage on it and have a some way of stirring the water to keep it in motion. And you put a thermometer in there and then another thermometer outside, and you'll find that the amount of heat generated is more than the amount of energy that you're putting into the system.
It is a slow building process, right?
It doesn't take that long. If you use powdered nickel, if you use a solid piece, yes, it can take days, because it's a question of the amount of surface area that's involved.
I see.
And the hydrogen, a nickel is a very porous material. It's like a sponge. And hydrogen is able to get into the nickel and start the reaction that is necessary. And in Japan, they don't call this cold fusion. They call it new hydrogen energy. And indeed, they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars in research on this and way ahead of us in many ways.
And all right. What can we do with this? Let's say the process works, and
mm-hmm.
then people can try it at home, prove it themselves.
Right.
How do we turn this into, I don't know, a home energy machine, something that powers an automobile, something that powers a city with electricity? How do we convert this to practicality?
Well, we don't have any really efficient ways of turning heat into electricity yet, other than driving a boiler and generating it the same way that they're doing with oil and coal.
Yeah.
And but this is a more less costly way of doing it than with coal or oil, and has no byproducts that are going to get into the atmosphere. So it has no pollution effect.
Okay.
And it costs about estimated to cost about a tenth the cost of coal or oil.
About a tenth.
Mm-hmm.
When will the first model be built?
I don't know. I guessed a year ago that we'd have it by now, and we certainly should. So I don't know how long it's going to take. You know, when the first microcomputer came out, they said, well, how long before we have some practical units? And I said, gee, we ought to have them in a year. Well, it took 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go back to computers for a second. I was discussing my love-hate relationship with them,
mm-hmm.
and part of my hate relationship is you buy a computer, I mean, 75 megahertz, 100
mm-hmm.
megahertz, boy, that was hot stuff for a while.
Right.
But then the next month's magazine
the first one's
comes out,
1 megahertz.
And you, that's right, and you get another magazine, and now you can get 133 megahertz.
Right.
Then the next magazine comes out, and oh my God, 200 megahertz,
right.
And now there's 233 megahertz.
Right.
And it's like...
Well, that means you don't have to wait so long after you push the key.
Well, I know that, but what I'm saying is...
Because I get tired of sitting here waiting for this confounded thing to shuffle around.
Well, right, but in other words, buy today and be outdated tomorrow.
That's right. That way right since the beginning.
Oh, but it's annoying me, Wayne, because I'm trying to keep up. You know, the board you buy today for graphics is a piece of junk tomorrow. The modem you buy today is a piece of junk tomorrow. I could go on and on.
I know. I have a barn full of old computers.
And it's like once...
Well, what do you do with them?
I don't know. And what do you do with the old boards? I've got a stack mounting up here of old boards.
Well, I do have a suggestion. Why not, instead of stacking them there, give them to a local school so the kids will have something to play with?
I've actually done some of that.
Okay.
But it is just a personal dilemma. And frankly, I wonder where it's going. I mean, I think the top might be about 266 megahertz now for something IBM variety. And where is it going?
Well, of course, they're developing some chips that are a lot faster than that. And again, as with your quickening, our computers are quickening. And they're going to keep on doing it.
Until what? Until one day one of these things becomes self-aware. Now, enough storage, enough speed. I mean, what is the human mind but storage and speed?
But we don't know what awareness is yet. We know that individual cells have awareness, but we don't understand it.
Do you hear the story about the 57-year-old lady who got the heart and lungs of a teenage boy,
mm-hmm.
woke up with the cravings of that teenage boy,
right.
exact
well,
cravings. Now, even more than that,
yeah.
they don't tell you the name of a donor. The
mm-hmm.
woman went to sleep and dreamed the name of her donor.
I don't doubt it.
I'm going to interview her. I'm trying to interview her. Explain that one.
One of the books in my guide to books that you're absolutely crazy if you haven't read has to do exactly with that. And let's see, that was called Secrets of Your Cells.
Okay.
Page 3.
All right, so does that imply that our consciousness, or even our soul, or God, who knows what word to use, is contained in... our entirety, in every cellular bit of what we are.
Yes. What they discovered in the Secrets of Your Cells is that if you take some of the cells, say, from the roof of your mouth and put it in a gelatin solution and put a voltmeter on it, voltmeter on it, and then you put another voltmeter on the person, those meters will go in synchronous, be synchronous wherever that person is.
You're kidding.
Nope. You remember the Secret Life of Plants 20 years ago?
Yes.
With the work of Cleve Baxter?
Yes.
Well, I called Cleve and I said, you know, this book is 20 years old. What in the heck have you been doing lately? And he says, well, you won't believe it. And I said, well, try me. He said, well, you want to call O'Leary and talk with him. And you've had him on. And
Brian O'Leary?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, of course.
So I called Brian and talked with him, and he said, yeah, let me send you a copy of this secret, you know, the secret life of your cells. And this work that we've been doing is fabulous. And as I say, they found that the cells somehow are in communication with each other. And, of course, I pointed out in my editorial in 73 magazine that this helps explain why twins have so much in common, even though they've been raised separately, and they'll have wives and children of the same name and so forth. And because there's a communication there on a level of which they're not consciously aware.
Right.
And this brings in, this explains why so many transplant people do have that experience, and why even blood people, you know, people with blood transfusions,
yes,
run into the same phenomenon.
That's right.
So it's almost something to think about. As I say, I've reviewed this on page 3 of my little guide. Another thing.
All right, Here, let me stop you.
Okay.
Let me ask you about the ethical, moral side of it.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking the other night, a really interesting discussion about a horrible thing, the rendering of domestic pets for pet food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horribly true. But somebody called up and said, you know, then, isn't transplantation of hearts, lungs, whatever,
mm-hmm.
isn't that in almost the same way a form of cannibalism?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Is it? Is that a thinking moment?
Yep.
I mean, it's a very hard question, isn't
sure.
it? I mean, in a way, if cannibalism is wrong,
mm-hmm.
and I clearly believe it is.
Why is it wrong?
Well, I look at mad cow disease, Wayne. That's the result of cannibalism. In other words,
mm-hmm.
feeding cows to cows.
Right.
If that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I say I believe it is based on that it's kind of like incest. It's something we know is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It produces deformities and seems unnatural. And I'm not up on my high horse here. I'm just intellectually trying to consider this. Then transplantation is actually or maybe in the same category. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I'm thinking it over.
Well, certainly cannibalism is a bad thing if the person you're eating has been sick.
Are you implying here that cannibalism is okay as long as it's been a Mensa member or something? Wayne.
Not a smoking Mensa member.
I see. In that case, I'm safe. I'll keep my parts. Right. I'm still smoking.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier had to do with the diseases coming from space.
As a matter of fact, let's get back on that, the snowball business.
Yeah.
I love it when scientists say, no, this is ridiculous, and they ruin somebody's career, and then they're forced later to come back and say, uh-oh, looks like we were wrong. Stay right there. Wayne Green is my guest. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997.
This may be breaking news. I need confirmation of it. But let me read you what I've got from James, listening in Ridgecrest, California. Art, I'm surprised that you did not mention the flash. At the top of the hour news, they covered the flash occurred, some kind of flash, in a lab at Los Alamos. Government says that radioactivity localized to a small spot on the floor of a lab there. What do you make of that? Well, I don't. Number one, I don't know it is so. I would appreciate anybody filling me in. Fascinating stuff. I wonder what has happened at Los Alamos. Yikes. Anyway, thank you very much, James. And that is facts from a listener, not a news item until I know otherwise. If anybody else has information on it, I would appreciate that very much. Once again, a scientist who had nearly had his career ruined because of what he said he thought was occurring is now being heralded as a scientific hero, from obscurity to sudden fame, because he now has been proven right. The Earth is being hit by snowballs, some as big as houses, thousands of them every day, every day. As a matter of fact, they say the objects deliver enough moisture to Earth to get this, to cover the entire planetary surface with 1 inch of water every 10 to 20,000 years. Anybody out there see the movie Waterworld? So, not only are these big old snowballs delivering water, but they're delivering organic matter as well, aren't they, Wayne?
You bet. two of the books that are in my guide to books that you're crazy if you don't read. Number one, and a very brief resume here, Diseases from Space by Sir Fred Hoyle and Chandrawick Ramasinghe. Now, Hoyle is one of the leading astronomers in the world. And in 1979, he wrote this book. And it says here, this book by two of the world's leading astronomers doesn't leave much wiggle room for skeptics of their proposition that many of our epidemics are arriving from space. You'll learn a lot from this book, and it'll get you set up for the next one, which is even more challenging, and that's Evolution from Space, 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking 1981, and that's, what, 16 years ago.
Right.
Hoyle, like Lerner, makes an excellent case for the universe being much, much older than the Big Bang adherents, and for life to have originated who knows how long ago. This book is marvelously detailed with facts which back up the concept of life arriving from space, and the case is made from a number of different approaches. A fabulous book.
What about Adam and Eve and Garden of Eden? And
right. Well, it depends on which religion you, which old book you prefer. you've discussed your feelings on religion, and I concur with you.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very. My feelings about religion are very simple. I really don't care to crush or try to crush anybody's faith, and I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that evolution and the concept of a creator can well go hand in hand.
Right. Well, prayer works, and so that's a given. We don't know why it works, but we know it works. In my list, in my guide to books here, quite a number have to do with health. Many have to do with education, and even some have to do with making money. And that's one of the things that I think your listeners would be really interested in is learning more about how to be healthy and wealthy, and maybe even wise. Why not?
All right. You've been a millionaire, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You're not
been there, done that.
Yeah, you're not a millionaire now.
No.
So you've written books on how to make money. I guess if you were a millionaire, that qualifies you on how to make money. How'd you lose it?
Oh, I lost it mostly by being careless with it and giving it to people to start businesses. not supervising them.
So you could write a book on how to lose money, too.
Oh, sure.
All right. This takes
trusting people is one good way to lose a lot of money.
Is it?
And that's how I've lost most of the money that I've lost. But anytime I want to make it, it's just no problem to make it. And indeed, I explain the secret of that in my little booklet on making money, A Beginner's Guide. And one of the things, I'm working on a booklet now on how to get your dream job from 17 to 70, any age, no matter what your background or education and so forth.
How do you do it?
Well, first of all, you have to define, now, what is a dream job?
The one you want is a dream job.
The one that is fun, that really doesn't seem like work.
That's right. That's the one I've got. I did
exactly.
It.
And me too.
Okay.
And
so how do you say it can be done?
All right. What I do is explain, look, find out some field that is so much fun to you that it doesn't seem like work.
Right.
And find an entrepreneur in that field with a small company. And go in there and say, look, you have a bunch of things that need to be done that nobody's doing. I will do them. And if I don't know how to do them, I'll learn. And you have a job right then and there. I don't care whether you're 17 years old or 70. You've got a job. Because that fellow has a bunch of things that he needs done, and he has nobody to do them. And then what you do is learn the fundamentals of entrepreneurialism on his money. OPM, it's called, Other People's Money.
Right.
And you learn about advertising, you learn about marketing, you learn about purchasing.
So in other words, you try to meet somebody like Wayne Green and have him give you money.
Exactly. And if anybody walked in here and said, look, I'll do anything you want.
Right.
And if I don't know how to do it, I'll learn.
Yes.
He's got a job. I don't think I've ever had an employee like that. I have tried real hard, and I've had a couple thousand employees down through the years, and I have tried everything that I know to motivate them and say, look, golly, if you'll read some books on how to sell, just think how much better you'll be able to sell advertising or be able to sell this product.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't get them to do it. I go to conferences and make tape recordings of people that are telling how to do these various things, how to sell, how to get subscriptions and so forth. And I say, I have all these tapes. Here, listen to the tapes. I can't get them to listen to the tapes.
I know. One other thing I found out is that regarding motivation, money is not really an answer to that. In other words, if you have an employee and you give them a substantial raise,
mm-hmm.
there will be a short spike in their productivity,
right.
and it will fall right back down very shortly to the same level was at before.
This applies to every person that's listening right now. And the last time I was on, I got an awful lot of response, really amazing. But I just did a survey to find out, and I found out that 88% of those people never went to step two. In other words, I sent them a list of the booklets that I have.
Yes.
And I never heard from them again. They don't have the motivation. They don't take the initiative to do things to help themselves.
Well, now, your figures might be skewed because it may be they didn't feel a need to communicate with you. In other words, maybe they obtained the books, read them, and got some good.
All I sent them was a list, a list of the books that I have available, explaining about the one about making money.
Sure, but you might not be the only source of those books.
I am.
You are?
I've read thousands of books, and I've never seen anybody give away the secret of how to make money before. Never. And you would be hard put to find any other book on the bioelectrifier other than reading the articles either in 73, and we had one in this May issue, by the way, and one last May, and the results coming in from that are stupendous.
Okay, let's talk about the bioelectrifier for a moment. The bioelectrifier, among other things, it is said, can eliminate detectable AIDS virus from the body, yes?
Mm-hmm. Right. It seems to be able to take care of any virus, any parasite, any microbe, yeast, or fungus. It's in the blood. And this was discovered by the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York. And they patented it, and now they're keeping it a secret and not letting out the word on it. In their patent, they show how they take the blood out of the body, pass a small electric current through it, very small, and then put it back in the body. And Dr. Bob Beck, who is a pretty well-known physicist.
Yes, he is.
Said, well, you know, why take the blood out of the body when it's coursing through your arteries all the time? Let's just put a couple of electrodes on each end of the arteries here and pass the current through the blood while it's in the body.
Right.
So he tried it, and the results were astounding. And he's done a number of very thoroughly authenticated, laboratory tests showing that this rebuilds the T cells and gets people out of AIDS and almost any other virus that's in the blood. I don't know of any. You've got this new virus that's coming along.
Yes.
I'd try the bioelectrifier immediately. The Ebola, let's put the bioelectrifier on it.
Well,
so I have a booklet that explains all this history and gives circuit diagrams for building it.
Right. I want a little information. Now,
right.
At least, when was the first time you and I did a program? It's got to have been a year and a half or so.
Oh, about that, yeah.
We talked then about the bioelectrifier.
Mm-hmm.
And I should imagine that because of this program, what you've done in 73 and so forth and so on, then it awful lot of people with AIDS and other maladies have tried the bioelectrifier. What are the results?
The results that I've heard and that I've seen have been absolutely... I have not heard of any failure yet. Let's put it that way. I've heard of a lot of successes, and I've heard of no failures.
Successes meaning people...
Meaning they are back to full health again. With
all
their
right.
T-cells rebuilt.
All right. Bob Beck sent me one.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it here.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I'm going to give this a shot. What the hell? Who knows what's running? None of us really know what's running around in our system. It wouldn't try. Give it a shot. And so I did something I normally don't do. I actually read the instructions before I tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed in the instructions that there was a whole list of things that you had to do. You had to quit smoking. You had to quit drinking. You had to quit any drugs. You had
to stop putting poison in your body.
You had to drink zillions of glasses of water every day.
Right.
You had to be on a certain diet and eliminate all kinds of things from your diet. You had to do, and I sat there thinking, by God, forget the bioelectrifier.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to do all these things, you're going to be healthy as a horse.
Well, and there is a lot to that. A number of the books in my guide have to do with that, like the one on water, Your Body's Many Cries for Water.
Yes.
By Batman Geldy and so forth. And I just got a recent book here on blood types, and it shows that for each different blood type, you should have a different type of food that you eat because you have come up over thousands of years from people that were eating that kind of food. And they've been curing AIDS just by changing the diet.
Yep. So, I mean, it is fair to ask, Wayne, if a person were to do everything short of the bioelectrifier, if they might not come up with the same results.
Well, I have been trying to get hospitals to do some research on this. As a matter of fact, there's a ham who is the head of research of a hospital up in Canada, one of the big hospitals. I'm talking gigantic. And it's a research hospital. And I can't get them to do it.
Mm. Well, anyway.
And I've given him all of the information, and I just, and he visited me here, and I talked it all over with him, and I can't get any action out of them. And I think it has a lot to do with the pressure from the medical industry. And as I often say, their worst nightmare is an inexpensive cure for illnesses.
Sure. No, that does make sense, but it becomes the answer for everything that ought to be here and isn't here. That the oil industry or the medical industry or whoever are suppressing all this stuff.
You don't think all these people are crooked, do you? You don't think that the tobacco industry is crooked?
Look, I've become properly cynical, but you know something? There was a 120-year-old lady. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, she's still around. She's still alive, 120.
Yeah.
She quit smoking at 118.
Right.
118. Now, I'm not saying that cigarettes are good, because we all know they're probably not.
Sure.
But I think that there is no clean, easy answer, and there's lots of people who smoke all their lives and die of something totally unrelated.
Yeah, and run over by a truck.
That's right. And I also suspect that a lot of, you know, what is it they say now, almost 400,000 people die a year from smoking-related illness?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have 800,000 people dying in hospitals of contacted illnesses.
Yeah, so
we don't say anything about that.
Yeah, exactly right. And that brings me to colloidal silver.
Mm-hmm.
This must be my night to be skeptical of things, but, you know, we talked briefly before the program. I decided, man, I'm going to give this a try.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a sucker for these things.
Right.
So I took high quality, high quantities of colloidal silver
mm-hmm.
for a month before I went on vacation to
mm-hmm.
Mexico.
Right.
And by the way, I'm not blaming Mexico.
Let's blame Mexico.
Nah, I'm blaming the airplane. While I was in Mexico, I continued. We took our supply of colloidal silver, and we took it there, and then continued to take it for 2 days after we got home, until
mm-hmm.
we both came down with one of the worst cases of the flu that we've ever had, which I'm sure I contracted on the airplane, and I thought colloidal silver kills all viruses, my butt.
But you didn't use Bob Beck's bioelectrifier.
Oh, jeez. So, in other words, I should have been taking the colloidal silver, had the electrifier on me, and...
Right. Well, silver smilver, you should certainly use the electrifier when you got something like that zipping through the blood.
Well...
Come on, you've got the unit there.
But I know.
And it's small enough to fit in the shirt pocket.
But what,
if you have a big pocket.
It discouraged me, though, because the claim that people, the colloidal silver people claim,
mm-hmm.
they claim, Wayne, that it kills all viruses.
Well, I don't know what other damage you're doing to your body.
A fair amount.
Do you have mercury fillings?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a talk with my dentist about that. She said the anti-mercury people are full of it.
That's right, and they have to say that. Read the book. My goodness gracious, it's in my guide, and it's called It's All in Your Head, and it is very thoroughly documented. But they have to say that, otherwise the dental industry would be sued incredibly. Because we've got so many documented cases of people with multiple sclerosis that when you remove the amalgam fillings,
mm-hmm.
Within a few weeks, they're up and running.
By the way, as we head into the... We're going to go to the phones here shortly, folks. In fact, after the hour here. W6OBB. I feel that to keep AM radio a viable resource that everyone can depend on in the event of emergencies and or other public service, we need to keep our standards high, and that's in bold print, which means to, and then he challenges me and spells out, keep the code, spelled out in CW. That's a friend of yours, huh? Hold on, Wayne, we'll be back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997. listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997.
Good morning, everybody. My guest is Wayne Green, who has seen and done just about everything. And we're going to get the phone lines open shortly. Wayne Green is my guest, and this just came in, Wayne, and I'll just read it. It's from Alexander. It says, "Dear Art, Wayne is quite correct. The bioelectrifier does work superbly. I've been building them for the last 3 years. You need one to survive. Regards, Alexander." I don't know about that, but I must say, and I will say, that I have not received one negative comment yet from anybody about this bioelectrifier, Wayne. I really haven't, not one.
Nor have I.
And they've all been positive, and so that is...
And I've been promoting this, with articles in 73 magazine on how to build it, because it's very simple to build.
Well, what I want to understand is, how and why can electric current, voltage and current, mm-hmm. passed through the bloodstream at an artery.
Right. Well, the current passes through, not
the voltage, current. Yeah,
right.
That's true. Right. How can it...
Well, it does two things.
No, let me finish. Yeah. How can it kill the bad guys, the viruses, mm-hmm. without killing anything that is good?
I have a feeling that if... that you probably want to do the same thing I do, and that is keep a lot of good food coming into your body.
Yeah.
To rebuild anything that gets hurt in the in the process, but I have not heard of any bad effects yet from this from anybody. And my gosh, after publishing two articles, and we have about 100,000 readers with 73, and
still though, that's
if anything bad was happening, I think I'd hear about it.
Well, I think you would too, but it's still anecdotal.
Mm-hmm.
And again.
Well, that's why I am pushing so hard to get some research laboratories to test this. But just as the laboratories have, other than this NASA one that I just mentioned, have refused to test cold fusion,
Glad you mentioned that, because listen to this. Now, react to this and tell me if it's true or not. Art, the 6th International Cold Fusion Conference, held in Japan, well supported by Japanese organizations, failed at 3 advanced experiments carried out. All gave no indications of cold fusion. Japanese government funding for cold fusion is now being wound down. Despite this summary, speakers gave encouragement to cold fusion. But the fact is, they're now winding the funding for this down in Japan.
I have no reports of winding down. Indeed, I'm getting more and more papers from Japan for my cold fusion journal. And they are leading the world in their development of the theory of why this is happening.
So you had not heard about these...
I have not heard of any cutting back of funds in Japan, no.
What about the 6th International Conference and the failures there? Have you heard of that?
No, I have not heard of the failures. They have not been reported. I have heard, of course, that Patterson was there with Dennis Cravens demonstrating their cell, and as they have demonstrated at conferences here in the United States, showing that it is generating about 1,000 times more heat out than the energy going into it, and up to 4,000 times now.
Okay, first time caller line.
Oh, wait a minute! One more thing.
Yes.
You hit me right at the end with the most code thing, and I just
wanted to make
an observation on it.
Yes, yes, yes.
This is the ham version of a religious fundamentalist.
you don't argue
with them.
No, you don't. You don't. And there are a lot of things that I'm concerned with regard to ham radio. Anyway. I've got iPhone here. We talked about it last time.
Mm-hmm.
And, Wayne, I'm afraid that for the coming generation, ham radio may be on the way out. I don't like being a naysayer, but, God, Wayne, I can sit here in fact, in the seat I'm in right now, mm-hmm. go up on one of the iPhone servers,
right,
and I can talk to somebody in any country you can name, and a lot that you can't contact on shortwave, considering the state of the bands right now. Not only can I talk to them, but I can see them in full living color while mm-hmm. I talk to them.
Yep.
Now, what's that going to do to ham radio?
Well, it certainly is going to provide an alternate for youngsters. But again, there the youngsters are not learning about technology. They're just using it as a toy. And with amateur radio, we have the ability to learn, use that as a means for learning about digital communications and the things that are important in the next century.
In other words, you're pitting something, a learning process, mm-hmm. even a painful learning process, particularly when they include the code, and technical
well,
stuff.
I've been trying to get rid
to
of the code for a couple generations now.
So that you can sit down in front of a ham rig and try to scratch out a barely sometimes discernible signal from the other side of the world, as opposed to going over to a computer where you don't have to learn anything,
mm-hmm.
and talking to somebody in fully quieted, seemingly fully quieted FM audio and beautiful color video in Sri Lanka.
Right.
That's a pretty rough contest. Which way do you think it's going to go, Wayne?
Well, One of the things that you've made as a given is that we're not going to have any advance in technology in amateur radio, and I don't accept that. I believe that as we develop our satellites, that we will have the instant communication anywhere with any amateur that you want in without interference.
Fine, I'm going to take the other side, and I'm going to say when people like me die, I'm going to be soon 52 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a ham all my life, and I love it with every part of my being, Wayne. But I think when people about my age and a little younger die, that's about it for ham radio.
Well, I think you're right. I have been pushing the ARRL for quite a few years to advertise and promote the hobby, and it is virtually unknown. I give talks to college students all the time. I've lectured at Yale and mm-hmm. Boston University and Case Western and so forth. And whenever I do that, I ask, how many of you people are familiar with amateur radio? And two or three hands will go up.
Yeah,
and I'll say, well, it's something like CB, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
Well, the detractors of the no-code thing mm-hmm. Will say if Wayne gets his way, it will be like CB. And frankly, Wayne, when you listen to the bands these days, there is a certain a deterioration going on.
Well, now, Art, how much CB operation have you done?
I refuse to answer that question on the grounds that it would probably incriminate me, because I've gone up there in years past and tortured them a little.
I have been on CB in most of the large cities in the country. I've used to take a CB rig with me wherever I went. And I have not run into the bad things that people tell about CB. I have a few tapes from people about it. But I found CB, I made some wonderful contacts with people.
Sure.
I found the people more helpful
than
ham.
That's true.
And so I don't have a bad taste with CB, and I used it a lot.
I've got a CB rig sitting right here, Cobra.
Right.
Sitting right here. No, I agree with you.
We need to have 5 or 8 million hams. After all, there's like 3 million hams in Japan now,
but
and we
Wayne,
have about 500,000 or 600,000.
Wayne, come out to Los Angeles, listen to what's going on the 2 meter ham repeaters, and
just a couple of them.
It's embarrassing.
I know. I've been out there. I've heard it. It's terrible. In CB, in all of history, we've had two people that were arrested, tried, convicted, and put in prison for bad language. Both of them were extra class hands.
Well, figures. All right, look, we're going to take a few calls here, and we'll do other things. First time caller line, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, where are you?
I'm Dave, and I'm here in Honolulu. I'm one of the foremost computer consultants here in the state.
All right.
And I commend you for a couple of reasons. Number one, colloidal silver, I agree with your feelings on that. And secondly, I certainly agree that the Internet is taking over with, you know, iPhone, CUC, Me, and other products like that.
Yeah.
I got rid of my Yaesu FT-101B, I guess it was called, you know, and a dipole antenna I had up on the cliff line at my house.
No, not and, me, man. I'm going to die with it.
And, you know, Wayne published the Build the Bioelectrifier article written by Thomas Miller in 73 back last May.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called Tom Miller. He was a very nice guy out there. He was in Richmond, Indiana, I believe it is, and probably in May or June. And I built four of the bioelectrifiers. And
really?
I had some, yeah. And I had some people that knew people that had AIDS and gave them out and gave them a trial.
And
didn't kill them, didn't do anything for them. I've tried one myself for about 6 months, and I've got the Bob Beck stuff, too, just like you have, Art, you
uh-huh.
know, where you've got to quit smoking, you've got to get on this fantastic, you know, diet and all
yeah.
these things.
What fantastic diet? Come on.
It's not a fantastic diet.
Give
it's
me
really
a break.
The way you eat. But I'm just saying, Wayne, and I'm not mad at you. I think you're a good, kind man and all that, but I'm just saying, from my experience and in my opinion, and I'm an electronics nerd,
mm-hmm.
and I custom build computers here, the bioelectrifier doesn't do anything. And the other thing that I have to
say... Did you really give it a good try?
Yes, sir. I've over a year. In fact, I've got one out right now tonight that someone's been using for several months, and he's, you know, soaking it in salt water, and you got them both
mm-hmm.
on the ulnar veins, you know, going into your wrist, and
right.
No, you know, nothing's happening to us, in other words. I tried it myself, and I'm 50 years old, you know. And
well, I tried it, but I didn't have anything wrong.
I didn't either, you know,
and I didn't change my diet. To me either.
All right, well,
no, I didn't either. But one other thing, if you wouldn't mind, please, Wayne, you may or may not remember me, but you know, I wrote you some nice letters, and I picked up your Making Money and your Wayne's Booklets and Tapes magazine and books you're crazy if you don't read and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another little criticism. I'm not trying to be, you know, mean to you or anything. Starting with, you don't put staples in your booklets, and so they all fly apart here in the trade winds. I may
mm-hmm.
have mentioned that to you. Secondly,
somebody stole my staple machine.
Yeah.
No,
secondly, is that Making Money, for example. I mean, I've read hundreds of Making Money books. I mean, that's we all like to read those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But you just... it's more of an autobiography, and, you know, you're telling someone finally to get a power book of, you know, old Macintosh and write newsletters, you know. And
well, I think that's one approach, right.
Yeah, that's one approach. In other words, you're not really giving any meat. It's more of an autobiography, and you wade through all this, and
uh-huh.
you don't get any points.
Well, you apparently you missed the point. I guess I'll have to go through and emphasize that. The
well,
point is that
yeah,
to
that
be
way.
An entrepreneur and to have your own business and stop working for other people, stop having to commute to work, that's crazy if you do that for more than a couple of years while you're learning to run your own business.
Well, I'm...
And these people that are commuting to work, they aren't thinking.
I am convinced, Wayne, that if you pursue... almost with obsession, what you want, that you will succeed. If you do not start out in the pursuit of money, but you simply pursue, and I mean this obsessively, I'm a very obsessive person, and I go after something like a laser beam, that you will succeed. There's no magic there. I mean, in whatever field of endeavor, if you become obsessive about it, you will succeed or die.
Well, as we mentioned a couple of hours ago, if you go to work for somebody and make it your business to learn everything you can on their money, you gear yourself up to run your own business. And by then you'll know what products or services are needed so that you can get started. And this is the way to freedom. This is the way to make lots of money and to have fun doing it.
All right.
That's what I explain in my booklet.
I'm going to, if I can find it, drag out the little book from the electrifier that comes with the electrifier.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told you also before we went on the air, I thought I'd give it a try.
Right.
And so I did something very unusual for me because I usually get a new piece of equipment And only after hours of not being able to make it work right do I resort to reading the instructions. And so I thought I'd read the instructions, and I did. Mm-hmm. And it has this list of things, and I'll read it, that mm-hmm. you've got to do before you begin using the bioelectrifier. And it is my contention that if you do all those things, you likely are going to become very, very healthy.
Well, certainly, if you drink 8 glasses of distilled water a day, that is going to help a lot.
If you stop smoking.
If you stop putting poisons into your system.
It's going to help.
And indeed, in my guide to books, I cover most of the poisons that we put into our system, like fluorides in your water and chlorine in your water.
Right.
And also, as we mentioned before, putting mercury into your system from amalgam in your teeth, putting poisons into your system from root canals, and there's a wonderful book on that by Meinig, and very, very well-researched and so forth. And immunization shots are terrible poisons that we put into your system, and there is no conclusive evidence that they work. And there's several good books on that.
Somebody said that to me not long ago, and I said, okay, what about polio?
Mm-hmm. And if you read the books in my guide here, you'll find that there are more cases of polio that have come from the shots than from anything else.
Well, does that jive with the number of polio cases we had before the vaccine versus today's count?
Yep.
It does?
Yep.
Okay. I didn't think that was so. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hello.
Hi, R and Ms. Green. This is Andy in Oklahoma City.
Hello.
Well, one concrete, one esoteric thing I want to get your guest comments on real quick.
All right, go ahead.
One, I'm a musician. There's not a lot of musical entrepreneurs. I wondered what Mr. Green might suggest without, except for maybe writing obsessively until I die and then make a lot of other people rich. Anyway.
Well, the music industry is extremely corrupt. And having published a couple of the major magazines in the field, I'm very familiar with it.
So what does that mean? So then how in this corrupt industry does he succeed? That's the concrete question.
I don't know any way for him to succeed.
That's your answer, Colin.
Well, I am pursuing it in college as that, in that way, so there are certain opportunities.
Forbes magazine published an article, a very well-researched article, showing that less than 2% of the artists on the major labels ever make a nickel of royalties.
All right. You better ask your esoteric question.
All right, all right. Well, he might have to try and get after it in the beginning of the next hour if he thinks it's good enough. It's about any research and information he may have about quantum physics and the way he briefly mentioned how consciousness interacts with reality, because I believe we're making this. We have a lot more control than we think we do, and I just wanted to hear what he thought about that and research into quantum physics. And
all right, quantum physics.
We make it up as we go along.
All right, quantum physics, make it up as we go along when we come back. Bottom of the hour, I'm Art Bell. 73 Magazine's Wayne Green is my guest. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997. presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired May 28, 1997.
My guest is Wayne Greene. He's really an interesting guy, and we're going to get back to him in a moment. Even though I'm about to say something that may seem negative, I must admit, regarding this bioelectrifier, I've had nothing but faxes and email like the one I'm going to read you just came through. Art, thanks for having Wayne Greene on about 2 years ago. At that time, I bought a bioelectrifier. I used to get sick two or three times a year, was laid up in bed for a couple of weeks at a time. Since I've begun using it, I've had only one very small cold that lasted for 3 days, and I did not need to be in bed resting. I took the little black box over to a friend. Her daughter has a disease called metachromatic leukostrophy. God, I have no idea what that is. She's been in bed for 10 years, unable to move. After using the bioelectrifier for 1 hour per day for 21 days, she began moving her right leg and arm. We're going to use the electrifier again for 2 hours per day to see what occurs. I've told other people about it, and they just don't pay attention and have no desire to even try it. What the hell is wrong with them? God bless Wayne Greene and you for having him on your program, Larry in Portland. And that really is typical of what I get, Wayne. However...
And what I get.
And what you get. So, you know, maybe there is something to it. But right on the... I went and got it during the break. Mm-hmm. I've got the manual here that comes with it. Mm-hmm. And in addition to ingesting about 8 glasses of water, you
distilled
must also...
Water.
A distilled water.
Right.
You must also, now listen here, stay off all forms of medication,
mm-hmm.
Let me finish. Medication, drugs, herbs, caffeine, tobacco, alcohol, garlic, painkillers, vitamins, etc. while on this program.
Right.
Now, if you do all of that, and in addition to the other things you say you should be doing, you're going to be healthy, or you're going to be in an insane asylum.
He forgot to mention cutting out sugar and white flour.
Sugar and white flour. Oh, yeah, that's right. You've got to cut out sugar
My
and white flour, too.
Gracious.
And probably go down and have all your amalgam fillings pulled.
Well, absolutely. Of course, if you want to poison your body and, you know, force the immune system to be weakened, okay.
No, all right, but look, the bottom line of what I'm getting at here is
right.
Dr. Duesberg, you know Dr.
Yep,
Duesberg.
Yep, yeah, I've read his book.
Really suggests a parallel to what this is suggesting, and Dr. Duesberg is virtually suggesting that with regard to HIV,
mm-hmm.
that illicit drugs and other poisons are causing this immune suppression.
Right.
That HIV is not the cause of AIDS, that it can
mm-hmm.
be. And
he makes a good case for it.
He makes a good case. And frankly, his advice is very much the same.
Right.
And he claims that people have been reduced to undetectable levels and so forth and so on by virtually doing the things that you've talked about here or Mr. Beck has, short of the electrifier itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly isn't going to hurt to stop putting poisons into your body.
I agree.
Stop beating the immune system to death.
But, you know, that means, so that means I can't wake up in the morning and have a cup of coffee. I can't take
How about having a glass of orange juice?
It's not the same, Wayne.
Oh. Well, of course, if you do need a drug.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't.
I do.
Golly.
I do.
I haven't had a cup of coffee in years.
You know what I have here? I have a cup of coffee with a straw in it because that's how I have to drink it on the air. See? I'm
yeah.
drinking some coffee now. Mmm.
Right.
I like coffee.
And so, I tried smoking when I was young, and I said, I don't understand why anybody's doing this, and I didn't.
Well, I mean, that's a good, of course. I criticize that, but I smoke cigarettes, too. And, you know, the insane asylum part? I've tried quitting more times than a person can imagine.
It's terribly addictive.
Oh, yes.
It's terribly addictive. Yeah,
absolutely.
And, of course, they, as it's been pointed out, the drug, pardon me, I'm going to say the drug companies, the tobacco companies know that.
Well, yeah, and they're beginning to admit it, and I didn't
right.
need to hear it from them. I'm
right.
no dummy. I know. Without it, I start going crazy.
Right.
So I'm addicted to this.
It's terrible to withdraw from that.
Yeah, it's an easy one.
One of the things that I wanted to mention, in the past, we've given my address.
Yeah, and we'll do that now. I've got a whole bunch of faxes. Could Wayne give an address?
I've got some fascinating addresses people have sent mail to.
Really?
Wayne Green, Scientist, New Hampshire.
And it makes it, huh?
And it made it.
Mm-hmm. All right, what is your offer? In other words, you've got a list of books that you're crazy if you don't read, right?
I have several booklets. Yes, one is a list of about 100 books that you're absolutely crazy if you don't read. And that has to do with education and with health and a lot of different subjects like that.
Okay.
And another one is Making Money, A Beginner's Guide. And if you pay attention to what I say there, you'll find that you're a sucker if you're working for somebody else for more than just a few years and commuting to work and all that kind of stuff. And we all suck in on these things. So... And I have a booklet on the bioelectrifier, which gives the circuits that appeared in 73 magazine and Bob Beck's original circuit and discusses the
sure.
whole thing.
Sure.
And I've got a number of reprints of my editorials, which, as you know, go on at great length about all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that.
All right. So they can so get
I have a list.
List
of these stuff that I send out.
Right.
And I do wish that people wouldn't ask for the list unless they really want to do something to help themselves. And because, you know, by golly, 88% of the people are not ever going to step two. And I understand that this is, you know, the result of the education, pardon me, I used the wrong word, of what you learn in school and so forth and so on.
But the offer is, if they will send you a self-address...
No, they don't even have to do that. Just send me their name and address, and
really?
I'll send them a list.
Sure. Really?
Sure.
So you're even popping for the postage?
Oh, sure. Here's
well,
one.
There's a change. Wow.
Here's one to Wayne Green, Peter Rabbit Road, Peter Rabbit, New Hampshire. Because I mentioned on there, it's Peterborough, New Hampshire is in Peter Rabbit.
Well, okay. In that case, then, let us go to great pains. Have you all got your pencils and pens ready? You can get this list free. But Wayne wants you to be serious.
Right. I want to help them to be healthy. I want to help them to make money. And I have the keys to it, and I just, golly, it's hard to get people to do things.
I know. And they will get a list back of at least 100 books.
No, they'll get a list of the booklets that I have.
100 booklets you have, and then so they can peruse the list, decide what they want, and order.
My list, pardon me, my guide, it isn't just a list, because I give a brief description of each book and what the benefits are of reading it, is $5. I haven't found any way to go out and buy all of the books that the readers are recommending without charging.
Right, and of course not.
And one of the things that I ask in there, look, if you run into a book that I'm crazy if I haven't read, let me know. And I'm about 100 books behind here on reading the ones that they recommended. And as a matter of fact, Barnes & Noble called yesterday. He says, we have 15 more books.
So in other words, they come to you and submit
right.
books for your list, huh?
And you can bet I'm going to take this course on photographic reading, which guarantees that I'll be able to read at least 25,000 words a minute.
We shall see. We shall see. And the list is free. Just send them your name and
right.
address and stuff.
Yep.
That's a lot of work.
I know. That's what I do these days mostly is open the mail, put it in the computer, send out the brochures, and get back wonderful letters. Oh, golly, I should send you more of the letters that I get.
Well, you've been
that.
Sending me summaries of
yep.
What people think of your appearance on the show.
Well, I wanted to goad you into getting me back on again.
East of the Rockies.
I didn't send you half of them.
I'm sure you didn't. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hi.
Yes, Mr. Green and yeah. Mr. Art Bell.
Yes,
my
sir.
Name is George, and I'm calling from Mansfield, Ohio.
Hi, George.
I've been absorbed and worked in electronics since a very early age. Around 4 years old, I started repairing car radios, and I have found electronics and physics to be some of the most fascinating subjects around. It's the key to life. And I've discovered several technologies which I have patents on. One is a patent, one is a patent pending, and the one is yet to be patented, actually. One technology uses neon gas in IC chips in computers to eliminate the possibility of a MOSFET, which is a metal oxide field effect transistor, which is in the chips, from blowing from a static charge. It does not slow down the speed of the computer either.
Okay.
I work with something that I invented recently, which is called nonlinear capacitance. At least I call it that. Basically what it is, it's a form of capacitance charge and discharge and fluctuations of capacitance charge and discharge in an alternating current, which is nonlinear. And what happens is I have found that a capacitor can actually, its plates, even though tightly wound and high capacitance at a low frequency induced to it with the special circuit added to the capacitor, can allow the plates to vibrate very violently and very strongly without tearing themselves apart and generate a field around them which can pull, literally practically tear the skin off the flesh if you have enough wattage running through.
Aren't you talking about a sort of a crystal?
Well, yeah, in a fashion. I'm speaking more or less of, I'll tell you, I'm speaking more or less of a certain type of diode configuration.
Well, you're getting far too deep for most of the listeners.
Okay,
but this is very interesting, and if you would send Wayne information on this and send me some.
I would love to know more about that.
Yeah,
well,
me too.
One of the earlier callers asked about quantum physics.
Yeah.
Let's not get into quantum physics.
but to be fair, Wayne, and caller, please send that information to us.
Yeah.
Quantum physics.
Oh, that's fascinating.
He said, aren't we making it up as we go along?
Well, with quantum physics, what we do is we see some holes in our understanding of time and our understanding of matter.
You bet.
And, of course, that gets back again for me to the concept of consciousness, which I have a feeling, I suspect, has a strong influence on evolution, not just natural selection, bless Darwin's heart, but I think that the consciousness also is guiding evolution.
Consciousness is guiding evolution.
Right, because I
alternate between, there is insufficient evidence to indicate the continuing process of evolution. Haven't observed it long enough. And I have not ruled out the possibility that we have gone as far as we're going and we are beginning to devolve. You got an argument for that?
No, that's nothing that you can argue one way or the other, really.
That's right. I may have a lot of evidence on my side, too.
Right, because, we have too little data on that. We only have a couple thousand years or so of recorded information, and things haven't changed much in that time.
No, they haven't.
Except technically.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hi, where are you?
Enterprise, Oregon.
Okay.
My name is Joy. It's a great show. You guys, your laughter is just wonderful. You two make a great team. I've got a couple things for you, Art. Congratulations on your book. And
thank you.
I wish I could afford to buy it, but maybe someday.
One day.
Well, read my book and make money.
Yeah.
I would like
read.
To. Yeah. I'm in a town of 2,000 people, and I do senior and disabled client care, and that flux is really bad, so I got dropped down to $107 a month right now, but... and I've also seen 3 UFO sightings. That's for you, Art. And Wayne, I am in the process. I'm going to have my teeth, I'm going to get false teeth, and I do have a lot of lead, so I know that's going to improve my health. But I've been diagnosed with chronic candida. Are you familiar with candida?
Yep, you bet.
Okay.
There's a couple of things that... I am not a medical doctor,
right.
But you certainly want to read the book by Bruno Combi, Dr. Bruno Combi. Read that right away. Read the one on water.
Wait. Bruno Combi?
Well, it's in my guide. To
books. Oh, okay. I'll send
right.
for that.
And another one that I just got and it is not got on my list yet is Eat Right for Your Type.
Huh.
And this fellow here has a diet solution for staying healthy, and he has been curing AIDS with this, just a diet change.
Huh.
Got case after case in there.
See, you proved my point.
And this is by Dr. Peter Dedamo.
Okay, is that the same one that talks about your blood type?
Yes.
Very
it talks
good.
About this. This gives diet for type O,
mm-hmm.
or type A, type B, and type AB.
No kidding. All right. Well, send away for his free list.
I don't sell any of these books, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I've read these, and these are the ones that you're just absolutely crazy if you don't read.
Yeah, people really should understand that. You're not selling these books. It's just a list of books that you have compiled that
right.
will help people. And the list is free, and you can get it by writing to Wayne and giving him your name and address.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really ought to send him a self-addressed stamped envelope.
It helps.
I mean, the nice people out there will do that. I guess you'll do it either way.
Right. Well, about a third of them send a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Really?
Yep.
I wonder what that says.
Well, it says that two-thirds are chintzy.
Wild card line, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hello.
Hi. Excuse me. Hi. This is Dan in Virginia.
Yes, sir.
Earlier in the program, Wayne was talking about a cure for AIDS that some company had come up with. It was a natural product. And
nutritional, I believe.
Right.
All right. Nutritional.
Yep.
What was the name of that book?
Okay. It's Innocent Casualties. It's a 1996 book. Innocent Casualties, The FDA's War Against Humanity by Elaine Feuer, F-E-U-E-R.
If
Innocent
you,
Casualties.
Okay. The second thing I want to discuss with you is I just faxed Art two reports on mercury, and one was on the front page of the Washington Post, and it states Senators Press for Report on Mercury Threat. And then I also faxed a study by Dr. Cleanheart, who states that in the University of Calgary, Canada, they have absolute proof that dental amalgam fillings you know, are hazardous and cause chronic fatigue and, you know, all these other immune problems. So you might want to check that out, and I'll be glad to. It's an 11-page report.
All right. You know what? Caller, thank you. I'm glad you brought that up.
I'd like to get a copy.
Let's have a dentist call in. I want a dentist to call me. Would everybody calling right now please stop calling? I want a dentist to call who thinks that amalgam fillings are just fine, because my dentist and every other one I've ever been to says there's not a damn thing wrong with amalgam fillings. Nothing. They don't make you sick. They don't poison you. And I would like to hear an argument on this subject, and therefore I want a dentist to call me. And maybe my own dentist, if she's out there. Boy, what a beauty she is, too. And I know the way dentists are. I mean, root canals, for example. You face a choice, Wayne, when your tooth is that far gone.
Yep, been there, done that.
Me too, lots of times. And it's either, and I've gone into the dentist, I've said, the hell with it, pull that tooth, I don't want it anymore, get it out of there.
Right.
Inevitably they say, oh no. Oh right. No, we can save that tooth.
Right, been there.
Yep.
And but you will not let them talk you into that if you read the book on my guide by Meinig. You will not ever let a root canal stay in your mouth.
Okay, well, I'm not a dentist. I would like to hear from a dentist. So hold on, Wayne. You can spend more time?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah. Stay right there. Would everybody else please hang up for now? Hang up. Stop calling. I want a dentist to call me. A dentist like my dentist, who says that tooth must be saved, who believes in amalgam fillings and does not believe that the mercury is poisoning us. I want to hear that argument presented. And so if there's a dentist out there, call now. I'll screen the calls during the news here. And when we come back, hopefully, on the line will be a dentist.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997. Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired May 28, 1997.
And everybody out there should not be calling. I want to talk to a dentist. Do you hear me? I want to talk to a dentist. One who uses amalgam and can defend the practice. My dentist uses amalgam. I have it in my mouth, mercury. And I want to talk to a dentist who can defend that practice. Everybody else should now not call. You will only waste your money. I've been hearing this argument for years and years and years, and I want to hear it presented. I want to hear it here on the air. So you don't have to identify yourself by name. If you're a dentist, I want a call from you on one of the various lines. So there you are. Let's see if we've got some dentists on the line. Wayne Green, are you there?
Pretty much, yes.
But fading, probably.
No, I'm doing fine.
No, you
really are. One of the things, if you get a dentist, I'd like him to discuss Dr. William Douglas's recent Second Opinion newsletter.
Well, now, that he might not have read it.
Okay, well, golly, he should.
All right. Well,
Douglas mentioned a research project that had 2,800 multiple sclerosis patients, and they found that 98% of them had mercury poisoning from their fillings.
All right. Well, look, let's see what we can find here. On my first time caller line, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Are you a dentist?
Hello, sir.
Hello. Are you?
Yes.
You are.
Yes, I drill them and I fill them.
You drill them and fill them.
Yeah. I heard a bit about what Wayne Green was just saying about a study done with mercury poisoning.
You're not an American dentist, are you?
No, I'm a Canadian dentist.
I can tell.
Best in the world.
All right. All right. Look, we're talking amalgam and we're talking mercury, and the argument is about poisoning. Wayne and others suggest that we are poisoning ourselves with mercury. Is that your opinion?
That is a fact. Okay, it's not basically an opinion, it's a fact.
It's a fact.
It's a fact if mercury is released from the filling into the body. Now, an amalgam is basically an alloy of mercury or another metal or something soft like plastic fillings and whatnot. But you were talking about root canals earlier, that got my attention.
All right.
And you've got to realize when a root canal is done, the nerve is taken out of the tooth.
Correct.
This is a molar, for example.
Correct.
It's taken out, and the holes in the tooth, where it goes down with the root canals, where they went down to the base of the tooth itself, are very, very small. And when those are filled with normally mercury and in the amalgam form, when they're filled and capped with the crown, the mercury inside the tooth is totally encased, except for the very small, let's call it a port at the bottom of the tooth. So when you've got to, like, actual decay of the tooth, and the breaking of the filling or the actual the filling in the tooth over time, the release to the body is pretty slim that it actually would take place because it's still encased in the enamel of the tooth. But an actual filling where it's open to eating and crunching and biting and whatnot, where it breaks down, you know, when you go to the dentist, and everybody hates to go to the dentist.
I do.
Myself included.
Yeah.
And I have mercury fillings myself. The thing with that is, you know how they put the rubber dam in your mouth? And you know what I mean by the rubber dam?
Yeah.
Big piece of rubber goes in around the tooth with the dental floss, holds it
yeah.
down and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, that is there for a couple of reasons. And one of it is to stop the mercury from the filling going down your throat in case you swallow. Because 9 times out of 10, a lot of people complain they don't have the suction. And you get a little saliva build up in the back of your throat, so you
right.
want to swallow, and there's
right.
a chunk of mercury, it goes down. So that's why they put the dam in there. Now, the danger of ingesting mercury probably is the greatest during extraction of the tooth, when the tooth breaks, or filling, or removing a filling and putting a new one in.
All right. Well, Wayne said that root canals are death on a stick. I mean, he didn't really say that, but...
Well, let me read just one brief paragraph on that, on this root canal cover-up by George Meinig. It says, can bacteria hide in the catacomb structure of your root canal dead teeth? This book could explain why you have a number of chronic illnesses and show you how to get well. Can one dead tooth cause heart problems, rheumatism, cataracts, kidney and gall problems, you bet your bippy. Read about the work Dr. Price, which has been covered up by the dental mafia for 70 years.
Dental mafia.
Right. Read what the introduction of white flour and sugar has done to the health of every primitive tribe and us.
Okay, well, now we're moving away from...
The root canals, what he pointed out is that when they take a tooth that has had a root canal, remove it, grind it up, and mix some distilled water with it, and then filter out the grindings, and they put the distilled water then into a rabbit, it comes down with the same illnesses, chronic illnesses that the patient had.
Okay, sure. I understand what you're saying.
Right.
Absolutely. It's like the same rabbit shot by a bullet. If you take him through a laboratory, if he lived for 15 minutes after you were shot, you're going to have blood contamination also, as if you were shot by a mercury bullet. But...
I'm not talking mercury. I'm talking the microbes that live in the catacomb structure of the root canal tooth, which is now dead and hot and wet and provides a wonderful climate for that.
Well, absolutely. A lot of the diseases like the tic de la rose and whatnot, where there's paralyzation of the face, the nervous system, is caused by the infection in the tooth.
Right.
And you see a lot of those. More people are suffering from their teeth. Bad teeth.
Well, then, Mr. Dennis, then how do you defend doing root canals?
Well, all the root canal does is takes out all the bad pulp, the infection. You take that all out because that is what's causing the problem in the first case. And you fill it back with a filler, be it amalgam, mercury, or plastic, which is like an epoxy, two-part epoxy, and then putting a cap on the tooth so the tooth is totally sealed. The only part of the tooth that is not sealed is at the very, very bottom of the long spikes. Those tiny, tiny holes.
I understand. Yeah, at the very bottom, sure.
And that's where all this leaks out.
Well, if the tooth is totally sealed properly, it shouldn't leak because there's nothing in the tooth left to decay. There's nothing.
You're not sealing it from the bottom. You're only sealing it from the top.
That's true. But, you know, Files, Dr. Green, you've had a root canal.
No, he's not a doctor.
I've had a bunch of them.
Yeah,
I've had a bunch of them. And you know those damn little files that go so deep.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've got the little probe now. You put the little sender at the bottom.
Oh.
It's just a grounding agent.
And
it beeps when you
this.
Hit the bottom.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, me either.
Exactly.
Like where you churn it, like a
right.
Roto-rooter. Yeah.
Right. Sometimes you have to drill because the canals aren't totally straight. They've got a little bit of curve to them, so the little file hooks up.
Naturally. Yeah. Oh, please.
Absolutely. But if the tooth is totally sealed properly and capped, because a root canal always has a crown on it.
Right.
Then
all right,
is,
so basically then your argument is if it's done properly, it's safe.
Absolutely. And
okay.
The reason, well, like I said earlier, why we use mercury as an amalgam, a metal mix, is that it is durable and it is strong.
Right.
And if you have ceramic, plastic, epoxy, plastic fillings, you're going to be coming back more and more. And people don't want to go to the dentist more.
Oh,
so you do something that will last.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you. Now, Wayne, maybe he's right about that. I mean, if it's sealed, if it's done properly.
If he will read Meinig's book and then come on the phone and say that he disagrees with him, I'll be more convinced.
All right.
But I think he hasn't done his homework.
Okay. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Am I being heard right now?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I'm a dentist.
Oh, you are.
And
what part of the country are you
and
in?
And I'm in Washington, D.C. and in Maryland, state of Maryland.
All right.
It's interesting to listen to your discussion. Let me address two things as far as the root canal issue is concerned. First of all, the fact that the major chamber of the canal be filled properly, I think that's something that every endodontist or a person that does a root canal strives to do, but that doesn't seem to be the issue that's involved with the fact that the dead tooth can harbor bacteria and viruses and other things that the immune system can't engage. The physics of, or the physical properties of a tooth, as I think was pointed out, is that it's catecombed with multiple lateral canals, and not major lateral canals, but each It looks as if it's, if you look at it in cross-section, it looks like a piece of dead coral, where the canal, where the odontoblast, which is where the live cell that was inside the root at one time and now is dead, occupies a certain diameter. That diameter is around 10 to 12 microns, and it becomes a dead hole, or it becomes a space. The bacteria and viruses, as we know, are much less than 1 to 2 to 3 microns in diameter.
All right, you're beginning to break up a little on us. I take it you do root canals, don't you?
I do root canals now. The bottom line is that I have done a lot. I've taken an awful lot of root canals out of people's mouths and seem to positively affect their health. The problem that we see is that many people can tolerate root canals, or at least seem to be able to tolerate root canals, and that their immune system strong enough to be able to handle a low-grade infection. The information that I haven't been able to confirm by the Germans and some others is that every root canal that anyone has ever taken out of somebody's head has toxic problems and is not sterile. Has indeed a number of breeding bacteria or other microorganisms in it, and therefore then is unable to become sterilized.
All right. What about the amalgam issue?
Okay. The amalgam issue is again an issue that's gaining a tremendous amount of popularity, and really it doesn't belong in the dental information anymore. It really belongs in the medical toxicology arena. The dentists themselves, we've been using mercury for a long time, and in fact, the ADA was initially designed to support the people that used amalgams back in the 1800s. And what has when I was in dental school in the 70s, we were told that there's no mercury that escapes from the fillings. Well, you know, that's not correct. So therefore, then you have, and we do know from World Health Organization information that mercury is a major contributor to the overall toxic burden in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So those are facts that can't be denied. Now, the question that the ADA and others, the proponents of this, have to say is what is the acceptable body burden of mercury? Going back to the pathophysiology of mercury, we know that it's a very deadly material. It's very it's neurotoxic as well as neurogenic, and it screws up an awful lot of the hormones.
All right, so it comes down to benefit versus risk.
Yeah, and I think what we have here is the fact that there's such a wide variety of responses to people that due to their genetic makeup, their exposures, their accumulation of other toxins, that and the fact that it more than likely, when it does damage, it damages the autonomic nervous system, which is a system that is it basically creates the function in our body. It's the one that orchestrates how things, when organs turn on and off, and when blood flow comes and goes, and other kind of things. So, and there's a reason, anatomical reason for that, but we won't get into that. But the problem is that it gives, by doing that, it can give a wide range of symptoms, of which MS has been one of the things that many of us have been removing the mercury fillings from MS patients. But more than removing the mercury fillings, you got to get the mercury out of the body through various chelation processes, which is extremely difficult. In order to see the results there.
Right, I have two questions for you, and then we've got to go. One,
sure.
Do you now perform root canals?
I perform root canals reluctantly with a certain technique, and I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing. And I inform the patient as I'm doing it.
All right, and do you use mercury?
No. Haven't in about 15 years.
All right, I very much appreciate the call, and I now open the lines to everybody else. I got what I wanted. And you know what, Wayne? It just sounds like you're right.
Oh, my God.
I mean, here are a few obvious real dentists who cop to it.
Right.
Virtually cop to it.
And, well, it has to be a first for everything.
That makes me sick. Really makes me sick. Where's my dentist?
Well, I did my homework. And you haven't read the book.
No, I haven't read the book. I mean, I think that was a fair thing to do, to open the line for dentists.
Sure. No, I was glad to hear that, because that's not my opinion. It's not just the opinion of Dr. Meinig and so forth. But Dr. William Douglas has been saying this for quite some time and coming up with one proof after another.
I've got a lot of mercury in there, I know, and I've got a lot of root canals because I've gone through my...
Well, you maybe ought to think of cleaning that up and doing some chelation to get that out of the
blood. It cost me a lot of damn money to get it in there.
Yes, I know. I've been there. I've done that.
Oh, God. You know, I'm so sick of people not telling the truth. I mean, if what we just really heard from a couple of dentists there is the truth, then we're getting that nice...
It's hitting us from every side. The government is not telling us the truth about things. The doctors are not telling us the truth. Where is the truth?
I don't know.
Boy, is it hard to find.
Yeah, it makes me
sick. That's why I'm reading so many books, is trying to find out what the truth is. In the health field, you have an incredible number of claims of things being great and fabulous and wonderful, and most of them are bogus.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hello.
Yes, hello, Art. There was an article in the paper here about how our weapons scientists have come up with a smaller and cheaper way of detonating a hydrogen bomb and have been petitioning the White House to test such devices. And I was wondering what Mr. Green thought of that, and if he thought if there isn't some technologies that we should not be exploring, and also if he has any ideas on...
Oh, wait a minute. One comment, one thing at a time here. We've got time. Wayne, there you go. The personal hydrogen bomb is on the way. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, I have a thought on that. During the time of war, where we were at war with major powers, there was a justification for developing ever larger weapons.
Yes.
I think that rationalization no longer holds. And we're talking about a weapon here.
It is a self-sustaining process, like the political one.
Right. So, no, I don't think that that is something that should be developed or tested, and I don't think there's any practical application for it other than hoping that we have some world power come along and threaten us again.
Mm-hmm. All right, next question.
Okay, I wondered if you had any ideas on ways of increasing the wisdom of the human species.
The who?
The wisdom of the human
wisdom.
Species. Yes.
Yes, I do. Not necessarily human species, but certainly of Americans, and that is by fixing our one of the worst in the world school systems.
Mm-hmm.
And make it so that people are interested in learning and learn all their lives. We have the example of the Sudbury Valley schools down here in Framingham, Massachusetts, which are brilliant, shining examples of what can be done with schools.
In fact, that's true. That's true. Color
and boy, that could change everything. It could make it so people have motivation, have enthusiasm, and are learning all of their lives.
Okay. My thought on time travel is that time is a fluid, and we alter time as we go along. Nothing is written in stone. So time travel is theoretically possible. And if you go under the premise that we, with our ability to manipulate our technology, we will come up with a way to travel through time. Now, your question is, if time travel is possible, how come we don't see any time travelers?
That's it.
My answer to that is the reason why we don't see any time travelers is the fact that we never make it to that point in time where we discover our ability to travel through time.
2012 scenario, if you ask me, that's what that sounds like. When you break it down, hold on, Wayne, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997.
for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night.
Midnight at the oasis, send your camel to bed. Shadows painting our faces, traces of romance in our heads. Heaven's holding a hand, shining just for us. Let's slip off.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 28, 1997.
We should call it Amalgam Madness. Oh, I'm so angry about this. I really am. I mean, for the first time, I thought to stop and get some dentists, and I got them, and they confirmed what Wayne's saying. It's sickening. The truth truly is an elusive thing, isn't it, Wayne?
Well, we keep running into that all the time. I was just thinking about the dissolution, or I should say the disillusion that I had when I read Renee's book about NASA mooned America. You probably don't want me to talk about that.
Well, you can talk about it. There's a lot of people waiting to talk to you.
This fellow sent the book in, and, you know, it claimed that NASA faked the whole moon landing thing. And I said, oh, come on, you know, my golly, what kind of bunk is that?
Well, I think it's bunk, but
yeah,
I thought Amalgam was okay, too. So
that you haven't read Renee's book. And I have not found one single person who has read his book, and I've sold over 500 of those so far, that is not convinced that NASA faked the whole thing, not one. And
Richard,
I have since then heard from a number of people who were in good places to know that this thing was faked, and they confirmed it.
Well, Richard Hoagland says NASA stands for Never a Straight Answer.
Right.
I had a couple of NASA guys come on, too. And by the way, I should tell my audience, David Oates is doing reversals on the NASA guys right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me yesterday, and he said, oh, my God, you're not going to believe what I'm coming up with. Now, I'm not going to have him on until next week because he's doing some other reversals.
Right.
But I understand that's going to be a real shocker. So it'll be next week, David.
Well, Renee makes such an ironclad case scientifically. You know, for instance, that there is no way that human beings can live outside of the Van Allen belt without about 6 feet of lead protection. And they didn't have that. And he's got the facts and figures.
All right. Well, I still think it's bunk. But, you know, I'll read the book.
Well, don't read the book.
No, I said I'll read the book. I'll read the book. I'm willing to read
and
the book.
And then tell me Wayne's wrong.
You know, that'd be it for me. That'd be the final straw. If I found out they produced the whole moon thing in a studio, that's the final straw, Wayne. Right?
So then what?
I don't know, Brazil.
Right.
Australia, something. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hi.
You made the comment a while ago, we know where the truth is.
And yeah.
I believe it's a sad fact, but I believe the truth is in our doggone wallet. It's called money. Probably 85% of what you hear is dependent on whether there could be a buck made off the profit of it or not.
Yeah.
It's really sad that it's that way. There's hardly any truth anymore in the whole world. And Wayne, I really appreciate your knowledge. You just you amaze me. The things you come up with. You're one of those people that would really be an honor and a pleasure to know personally. And every time you come on Art's show, I get really enthused. I've been sick with a doggone cold, and when you came on tonight and Art announced that you were going to be on, I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be great. I'll
where
be
you located?
Darned if I didn't fall asleep three times during the show.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Illinois.
Okay. If you ever get to New Hampshire, look me up, for goodness sakes.
By golly, I ever get that way, I definitely will.
I'm always open for a free lunch.
I'd buy you a good supper. It'd be an honor and a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you. It really would. We lose you here at 5:30, so
right.
The broadcast is over for us.
But all right, well.
It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and Art, I've been trying ever since Mel's Hole to get a hold of you.
That's a long time. Ever since Mel's Hole, my.
It's been like pulling hen's teeth to get in, but your new phone system is really great.
No more tooth pulling, please.
well, thank you very much. I appreciate being appreciated.
Right. Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, please?
From Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. With Wayne Green.
Yeah. Yeah, hi, Wayne.
Hi.
Yeah, I appreciate all your information. There are two things I wanted to say. One is... that, you know, when I hear things, if they come from you or they come from anybody, you know, I just look at them and I make up my own mind and I just listen to all the sides. I just know there's a lot of stuff that in my own experience I'm sure, you know, has some truth to it. And I wanted to ask you, you know, what's the best way in your opinion to fight this whole medical problem? I don't even know anybody who's sick. It just bothers me incredibly that when people come up with possible cures for things that they can't, you know, that they get shut down or nobody can hear anything about it and everybody says, oh, no, that doesn't work. And I hear it all the time. And
I've got an answer for you.
Sure.
Educate yourself. Read some of the books in my guide that have to do with health and start telling everybody. Pass the word.
Right.
Educate yourself.
Yeah, the frustrating thing is, I mean, I went to a school a number of years ago, and we learned different things about health. And I thought, well, I'll tell people.
Right.
And when you go to tell people, they say, well, you know, I it doesn't say that. My doctor or this book or whatever it is says this over here. And if you say, well. And then they taught us, you know, don't tell them what to do because you're not a doctor. And it just amazes me that
I know
you,
we're all suckers on that. We've been brainwashed so thoroughly.
Right. You can't spread information with any, you know, firsthand experience or anything like that because somebody's going on a public scale because somebody's going to come down on you so hard and you won't even be able to get the information out to anybody that they're coming down on you because the media will ignore you and it's just the same story all over the place. But, you know, I don't have any experience with this myself. I could just, you know, I could tell it's happening, and I know people who, you know, get newsletters or whatever.
Yeah.
But
you'll
just...
enjoy my editorial in the August issue of 73, and I sent a copy to Art on what suckers we are in believing our medical institutions, believing our dentists,
right.
believing in our school system, and believing in college and so forth.
Right. I know somebody that got much better when the root canal was unroot canaled or whatever
sure,
it was.
Right.
So here we go. Thank you, caller. let's see. We've done in America. The political system is dead. We've done in probably apple pie is lousy for you. It's got sugar, right?
Right. And white flour.
White flour and
NASA,
apples are good. Yeah, so in other words, everything that we hold dear may not be so. And you know what really worries me, Wayne, is that in the traditional medical world, there's a lot of quackery and BS.
Mm-hmm.
But in the alternative medical world, there may even be more.
Exactly.
And so how the hell do you separate the wheat from the chaff?
Well, that's what I'm trying to do, and that's what my guide is, pointing out where the wheat is. And I've spent a lot of time trying to de-chaff things.
De-chaff.
Right.
That may be a new word. First time caller line, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hello.
Hello, Wayne. I was
great to hear you speak about George Meinig, because I've had the experience, and I could tell you, after reading his book, As Bad as Amalgam Is, this problem with wisdom teeth, not wisdom teeth, the root canals, is a national outrage. It is far worse than amalgam and far more dangerous, although amalgam is bad news. Anybody who reads Meinig's book, as you'll surely agree, will certainly see, with all the proof he puts in there, that this is very dangerous. And these dentists who say that they can seal it, Meinig clearly points out that they cannot seal it, and these dentists don't even realize why.
Well, we had a dentist on that confirmed that.
Yeah, I heard one. It also is pointed out that wisdom teeth being extracted are also a problem, and it has to be extracted a certain way.
Right. I've had all that done.
This is really a critical problem. People need to know that George Meinig, who wrote this book, is not some radical endodontist. He was the president of the National Association of Endodontists. He was the president of their national organization. This guy knows the subject. And one other person, I think, Wayne, if you get a chance to contact, because another person doing incredible work in alternative healing that he's not getting much credit, is a Dr. Dean Howell in Everett, Washington. If you get a chance, make sure you give him a call. Because what this guy is doing is just groundbreaking stuff. He's helping a tremendous amount of people. And because he is bucking the system and not using any drugs or surgery, he's not getting much recognition. But
may I ask you a question, please?
Sure. Yes.
What's wrong with getting your wisdom teeth pulled?
Well, the problem, as Meinig points out in the book, is, now, it's okay to get them pulled, but the problem is getting them pulled so that the infection at the bottom where they're being extracted, all the poison is removed. And if they're not done the proper way, the way Meinig suggests in his book, and how only certain dentists in the country which Meinig has trained know how to do the procedure, then the poison is still in there. And similar to the problem with wisdom teeth, I mean with root canals, you have with wisdom teeth.
Mm.
And I know it's bad news because I've had wisdom teeth myself. I mean, root canals, I keep mixing those up. And it's pretty distressing when you've spent so much money to have it done in the first place, and then you read Meinig's book, and you will be horrified.
Distressing does not do it service. Thank you very much for the call.
I would appreciate it if he would send me more information about Dean Howell. I'd like to know.
All right. Since it's toward the end of the program here, and I'm totally depressed now, I mean, I've had my wisdom teeth pulled, I've had root canals more than I can count, and I have mercury.
Right.
I'm a dead man. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you this morning?
Well, I was all right.
He's depressed.
Yeah, I am now.
Okay. I have kind of a complicated situation here. I injured my knee at work in December. And I was supposed to have surgery May 1st. After hurting my knee, I guess it hurt so much while I was sleeping, I started grinding my teeth real bad and broke off two of my back teeth.
Oh, boy.
I've only had three fillings in my life, and two of them were the ones that were filled. They started to become abscessed, and I finally, it took a while to get a hold of my surgeon, but the day I was going in to have my pre-op blood work, he told me that he could not do that. He couldn't do the surgery. He had to cancel it. Because if the abscess were to break, you know, after my surgery or whatever, then the infection would go directly to my knee, and I'd end up having my leg amputated.
Wow.
Do you know anything about that? Could that happen, or?
I know abscesses, I'm not a doctor, but I know abscesses can be dangerous, even worse condition, lethal. Yeah, if it lets go, I know that's true. But I can't know whether your doctor, what your doctor said is true or not, Wayne.
No, I'm. My expertise is in entrepreneurialism.
All right, then the easy advice is get a second opinion.
You bet. And take a look in Dr. Huggins' book. It's all in your head, and find a list of the dentists that he recommends.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. It's like all of a sudden finding out there's no Santa Claus. You know?
Yep. Been there. Done that.
Wild card line, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hello.
Hey, Mr. Green.
Yeah.
You said right at the beginning of the program that you said you lost the majority of your money by people you trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever tried to get any of it back?
No.
See, let me tell you a little story real quick. I know it's the end of the show, but...
Right. No, I lost $100 million with one.
Well, that's a shame because...
Wow.
I had three money orders worth $120. It was my cable, my phone, and my gas bill left in my truck, and somebody stole them. And so I pursued, like Art said, if I want to pursue something, I pursue it, and I will find out who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, come to find out 2 months later after the American Express did all of the tracing and all that, it was somebody that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
So I made copies of the copy they sent me of his signature, and I snuck over to his house, and I taped them all over his door,
mm-hmm.
and he woke up with a surprise. and I got refunded my $120, too, by American Express, and now he's got a court date.
Cool.
Uh-huh.
It cost me $24 to do the tracing,
right?
So I'm going to sue him for $24 times 100.
I'm a big believer in revenge. Yes,
oh, yeah.
Sirree, sir.
I could write a book how to get your money back and make their life miserable.
There are books on revenge that you can
right.
get.
Yeah, I've got a few of them here. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for the call.
I don't think in those terms. I just say, heck with it, and go on and make more.
Oh, not me. I will pursue someone to the ends of the earth.
The hell with them.
I can't get
why,
next to
why
that.
Why work up the stew over things like that? For goodness sakes, it's not creative.
Oh, yes, it is. Revenge is indeed creative and satisfying. Believe me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Wayne Green. Hello.
Morning.
Good morning.
Wayne Green, I got a couple suggestions for you. Get Kevin Trudeau's new speed reading course. It's not too highly priced, and it increases your reading speed 5 times. And about a 3.5-hour video cassette
mm-hmm.
workbook set up.
Well, Wayne says he can read, a million words a minute or something?
Well, I've got a fellow that I talked to yesterday who's got a course that kind of guarantees 25,000 words a minute.
Oh, there you are.
And has people reading up to 2 million words a minute with his course.
Give me a break. Oh, yeah. That's what I said, too. Give
yeah, this
break.
Is Lawrence.
And he's going to send me more information on that, and I'm going to try it, and I'll let you know.
All right. Where are you calling
this
from?
This is Lawrence from Alexandria, Virginia.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to WZHF, Health and Fitness Radio out here in Arlington.
Yes, sir.
I listen in the daytime. I listen to that program, their daytime health information.
Do they say things like this about Amalgam, about...
They had a program here in the last couple weeks, and what the problem is, the American Medical Association has got control over removing him. And they've had people call in...
You have to find the right dentist. Right.
They had people call in with success stories. One lady years ago, when she became a teenager at 14... had straight A's, and her grades started failing, and one thing led to another. She could hardly make it through college, and come to find out it was a filling she received with about the age of 14. But several people called in and told success stories about having fillings removed, and other people called in and identified the fact that when they find the ADA, American Dental Association, finds out that fillings are being removed, they revoke their dental license.
Is that right?
They've revoked Dr. Huggins in Colorado Springs, who's one of the leaders in this. But he's got a list of dentists that you can go to.
Who secretly
have the amalgam removed.
What is this, backroom removals?
Right.
As a young man and teaches dentistry and has a practice and also has some background in nutritional cures gum disease by nutrition rather than surgery and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you improve the immune system, it'll take an awful beating from mercury and root canals and everything else. But we're not doing that. We're poisoning ourselves with things like tobacco and caffeine and immunization shots and aspartame and fluorides and so forth, and continually beating the devil out of our immune system.
And, by the way, we didn't go to the moon.
Right.
Well, I guess I'm going to take my caffeine-soaked, nicotine-stained, mercury-filled self and go and just wallow somewhere else for a while. Wayne, it has been a pleasure having you on.
Well, I'm sorry I depressed you there, Art.
Well, a qualified pleasure. No, it's been a pleasure. I mean, you're always fun to have on, Wayne. But it has depressed me a little bit. We'll do it again, my friend. I guess the sun ought to be up in New Hampshire by now.
Oh,
eh?
Yes, it's been up here for quite a while.
Well, it's still dark here, and it fits my mood. Tell America and Canada and everywhere else good night.
Okay, thank you very much, Art.
No, tell them good night.
Oh, good. Well, a good morning, anyway.
Yeah, good morning. All right. See you later, Wayne.
Righto.
That's it. Good night.